Welcome to Season 6 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
Oddland is a 1-5 player card layering small box game designed by Dan Schumacher with art by Cam Kendall, which plays in about 30 to 40 minutes. As an intrepid investigator of all things idiosyncratic, your job is to explore the island and document these fantastic creatures. On your turn, explore by placing a terrain card somewhere on the island with the ability to cover up previously played terrains. Then place one of your 7 flora or fauna tokens on the card you've just played. These tokens are going to score based on their surroundings. For example, the pig horse scores better if adjacent to a longer coastline. Oddlands is available on allplay.com, along with other amazing partner games from publishers like Bitwing, Druid City Games, R2i, Post Curious, and more, where they offer a flat rate shipping of $4 in the US. So for sure, check out this game and the others. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration Publication, episode 123, Art Society. Today, we're joined by Mitch Wallace, the designer of this podcast spotlight. Thanks for being on the show. And for anyone who doesn't know you, Mitch, who are you? How'd you get into games?
First off, I'd like to say thank you for having me. This is very exciting. I listen to the show often. This is kind of like the game design podcast. It's like behind the music for board games, and so I dig it. So how I got into game design is probably a little different than other people's. Growing up, my passions were music and art, and I've always been a creative type. And I've played a variety of sports, and I played traditional cards, and on vacations, hearts, spades, and gin rummy, and the like. And there's a long and a short version, but the succinct version is YouTube. I watched a lot of YouTube from 2009 and on, and watched a bunch of Numberphile and a variety of other channels and topics. Some woodworking and whatnot was in there. And around 2018, I came across a video for an abstract board game that wasn't chess or checkers. I thought, yeah, I like this. And that quickly inspired me to make a game. I jumped over to Photoshop to mock up what it would be, tested it out. And then I eventually made a physical version and tested it with some people for a while. After that game, I had another game idea and another. And then I eventually heard about the Game Designers of North Carolina on a podcast I was listening to. When I heard about them, I was like, there's North Carolina. It's kind of big-ish. There's no way that they're close. They're in Charlotte, I'm sure. And then I learned that they meet 10 minutes from where I live. And I was like, I should probably go check that out.
Oh my God, that's so convenient.
Then I went to a meeting, and then I eventually went to another, and I just kind of tested some things out over time. And that's kind of where I've kind of got started, testing stuff, learning from people in the group. And that's what I've been doing.
Every time I think of that group, I think of the matching outfits. You guys have specialty swag, and it's layer upon layer of swag. It's we got a jacket, we got a sweatshirt, we got a t-shirt. I'm like, what are you doing? Coming rolling up a sports team.
Yeah, there's been talks. I remember when the jackets were introduced, it was another level.
It's so funny. Okay, so then let's switch over to Art Society. Where did the inspiration for that game come from?
Yeah, so Art Society actually came from another prototype of mine that wasn't working. And so around 2020, I started a game where you fill in a 4x4 grid with square tiles, and each tile has 3 to 4 pieces of information on it. And then in the first test, players said, this is too much information. It's 3D Sudoku. It's also easy to really get things wrong. Then test 2, I reduced what you scored, but I didn't change any of the art. And the feedback then was, this is visually too much for what we're doing, which was totally true. So it's make the visuals match what we're doing in the game, which is a great lesson. That game had 4 different pieces of information, background, foreground, all sorts of other abstract shapes and whatnot. There was a brainstorm session, and it was kind of what's a new setting that would make this game make sense with what we're doing? And there were about 5 to 6 things that were listed, and a salon wall was kind of the thing that came to the top of this would be good. So I plotted how each part of the game of that prototype was and how it would work as a salon wall game. When I started making board games, I had started a lot of games that were tile-based. And it was about this time that I felt like I needed to mix it up. I was getting a little burnt out on being in the same sandbox a little bit. So after making those notes, I just didn't work on it. And I went to go work on dice games and card games and Roll and Rights and Trick Takers and whatnot for about 2 years. And then after doing those and learning from all of those and all the lessons that those kind of games can teach you from trying to design them, I was like, let's get back. Let's get back to that salon wall idea. I think it'll be really fun. I could get this done pretty fast, you know. And then when I returned to it in September of 2022, you know, I looked at the notes, looked at salon walls and Victorian era salon walls to kind of get back in the headspace. I noticed that all the paintings were different sizes, different shapes, different subject matter. And I was like, you know, this would really be a missed opportunity not to incorporate those features. So I looked at those notes from 2 years ago and basically just threw them out and started over. I also looked at other art collection games, and I noticed none of them really cared about what you do with the art once you own it. It really, like, you could put it in a closet for all the game really mattered. It's just the fact that you had it.
Yeah, it's just like a card you took, and it's like maybe there's some set collection. Like, oh, I have more of this type of art. Like, look at all this pop art.
Yeah, exactly. And I really felt like there was a space there that could be leaned into. And, you know, art is meant to be viewed. So I wanted to make sure that that was a part of the aspect of the story, you know, an aspect of the competition that these, like, socialites were probably going to be chasing trends. Like, what are these trends and why are you even collecting this art in the first place? So going back to those notes and like trying to start anew, then there was just a whole set of other questions to answer because there is the Victorian era salon wall images that I saw. So what's the size of the grid? What's the value of the art? How are players acquiring the paintings? And why doesn't the player just collect the most valuable paintings anyways? And so those were all questions that I was working through. I jumped on the computer and I tested some sizes, some grids. I found that like a square grid really wasn't quite working, primarily because it just never felt like it looked like art. Very few pieces of art are square. They're always this like 3x4, 2x3 sort of dimension. And so that is something that I came up really quickly on. And then there was this like added benefit that players couldn't rotate the art in their board. And it's like amazing how many times I get that question, like, can I rotate this? It's like, it stops you, but also it won't fit on the board.
Yeah. So you're also not going to buy some fancy painting and put it sideways. You're not like that restaurant, the Tilted Kilt, where they intentionally turn everything and it like drives anyone who's OCD insane. I'm not even OCD, I don't think, but like it drives me insane. I will not go in there. It's basically like Hooters, but with kilts and terrible picture frames on the walls.
Right on, yeah.
Okay, so then how do you go from asking yourself all these questions, kind of creating a grid that makes sense, figuring out like how to turn stuff, to the actual rule set that is Art Society? And maybe go over the rule set for anyone who hasn't played it.
Oh yeah, sure. So in Art Society, all players are high society socialites trying to have the most valuable art collection. So a brief summary is that one person every round is the auctioneer, and they're going to pull a number of paintings per players plus one, and that's going to go into the auction. And then all players have a set of paddles, 1 through 20, and they're going to select a card from their hand, simultaneously reveal it, and then from highest value to lowest, players are going to select a painting until you get down to the lowest number, and that person has two paintings left over. And whatever they don't pick is going to go to the museum and increase the value of it in the art world. And every painting is a different size. And so it's going to go up by the size of the painting in the museum. Once you collect a painting, it's going to go on your board. You have to build off of anything on your wall. And you do not want the same genre of painting styles to match. Otherwise, they will not score at the end of the game. That's called a faux pas. But you do want the same picture frame types to match because that will earn you decor, and decor is points, and it helps you fill in holes and helps you complete your board, which is one of the ways the game ends. There is just a couple of bit more things about the game, which is at the end of the game, you're going to be scoring based upon the value of each genre. So you count up how many you have of each genre, and then depending upon where they end up on the prestige track and the museum track, they're going to either have a multiplier of 2, x3, x4, or x5. And then there's a little bonus if whatever's in the x5 is in this eye line, which is a special band, the lower third of the board. And so how did I come up with the rules? So one of the other things was like, how are players going to, like, why aren't they going to just, like, collect whatever's most valuable of the four? And it seemed like, well, there's going to be, needs to be four different genre types. And that kind of comes from, like, the four-color theorem, which is this thing I learned from Numberphile. And if they don't touch, then they're not going to score. So it's this thing, like, that's where the faux pas thing came from. Otherwise, you'd just be collecting all of, like, what's leading. And so there need to be this restriction in the game for how you're going to build. And then the value of art was, like, that was probably one of the things that was the trickiest thing as far as how much are things going to be moving up on the board. And that probably took the most time of the development. The first thing that I tried when a painting went to the museum, it was actually going to be based upon whatever value was lowest in the bid. And that was crazy because sometimes something could be moving up by 16. And so I found that there needed to be a range in which it should move because it should have some surprises and should have some swinginess to a degree, but it shouldn't be moving in increments of one. So once I found the formula for that, that really opened up the doors. But a lot of it came together really fast, and a lot of it was really just trying to answer some of those questions, such as, like, how do you fill holes? Like, the picture frame thing came up on the second test. I knew I wanted you to earn something, but I didn't know exactly how. And the first thing was filling a row or column, but because the paintings are such different shapes and sizes that either led to, like, huge explosions of how many things you can get at a time, or it was just too complicated to count. So that just making something, like, very succinct and wood frame matches wood frame, I get a thing, and that really fills in the holes and gets that nice boost of achievement. Like, I did something really awesome. And it's also really nice when players match more than one picture frame on a turn, and you get bigger decor. And that's been really interesting to see how players get above three. That was really interesting when someone got four or more that first time. And I was like, what happens? I was like, ooh, that's a really good question. I don't have tiles for this. I think that's a lot of it.
So, like, at what point did you end up connecting with Mighty Boards, who became the publisher of the game?
Yeah, so I met with them at PAX of 2022, and I've been going to PAX since 2021.
Is this PAX Unplugged or East? Which one?
PAX Unplugged in Philadelphia. And yeah, that was their first year there. I had been working on the game for about 3 months, and I was in the Unpub room, and I had, like, three or four really good tests, and I was feeling really confident with it. So I was like, let's go upstairs and talk to some people. And on my way up to Unpub, I'd emailed some number of publishers and publishers I thought would do a really good job with the art of the game, because a game about art that doesn't look amazing, it just really has to sing. And so I emailed a handful of people for then, and when I went upstairs, I found the Mighty Board booth, and everything they had made had been visually really stunning and great production. I really wasn't sure if, like, it was the game for them, because a lot of their stuff prior had been, like, really serious. And then I think I kind of misread what Hamlet was about. The art looked very friendly. I'm like, maybe they're going in a new direction.
Oh my god, that game is rough. It's also very small component-wise. That's so funny.
Yeah, and so that gave me, like, a little glimmer of, like, maybe, let's see where this goes. And so I, you know, stopped by and I talked to David, and he was really excited to see what I had, a lot of the sell sheets that I had, but he gravitated the most to Art Society. And from there, he said, like, let's send me over print and play files so that I can play back with my team in Malta. And he was like, send this by a certain date, which was, it was pretty fast, but I forget if it was so that he could play it by the end of December or early January, but basically early January they played it and they had felt very confident to move forward.
That's awesome. I actually got to visit them when I went to Malta last year. So they're a cool crew and they do make really nice games. And the components on your finished game was so nice. Like, even the box, having it be dual layered so you can, like, actually see the picture frame and, like, have the picture lower, was very cool.
Yeah. That was very impressive. I haven't seen that on many other games.
Yeah, no, same. What kind of changes ended up happening once you kind of moved into the development phase, and how did the development phase look for you?
Well, once they signed the game, they're already moving pretty fast, because when they told me that they wanted to move forward with it, they had share that they wanted the game out by Essen of that year. And I was quite surprised because I was like, that's in 9 months. And so they're like, yeah, we can do it. Honestly, they didn't change that much. They were working a lot on their end. They kind of only changed two things with the way the game works. They changed one rule about how ties work on the prestige track. There was one basic rule I had, like, design mythos is that there should never be any ties on that museum track. So when I present it to them, if there was a tie, the most recent thing, the most unfashionable thing took over, and then they made it so that it moved backwards. It had to be a more significant change in the prestige. And then when I presented the game to them, all of the tiles were face down in the box lid. And you had to shuffle them up and you kind of selected from this loose amalgamation of paintings. And they said at one point that it needed to be much more controlled and known information. And then after some discussion and emails, they came back quickly with the idea of an insert and showed me what the insert would look like. And that sounds awesome. And afterwards, like a few months later, I realized that going through my notes that someone had actually suggested something like that in my testing. But I was like, I don't think I'm going to be prototyping an insert for my prototype here. I go back and forth, but I hope that in the future I'll try harder to like explore options like that. But it definitely was the right decision, because you sometimes need to know if a painting size is in the game or not. It's also just really amazing to have it all right there.
I know, it's so organized, so pretty. And it's got mm-hmm. that kind of felt feel to it. Yeah. It's so overproduced, but in like the best way.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Definitely never seen that like flocking insert before. When I saw mm-hmm. that for the first time, I was like, this is special.
Yeah, no, that's so awesome. Especially because that was your first game published.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so how did that feel?
Nice.
Just nice. I was going to say, I was like, people thought this was a pretty cool game, just nice.
It's been a bit of a whirlwind, and sometimes the emotions or the words for the emotions aren't always, like, top of mind. But, I mean, honestly, someone playtested the game recently, and they're like, oh my god, this looks amazing, did you cry when you see it? And there was a miscommunication as far as when I would see my production copies. So I didn't see the game until PAX U, until like after it was released and until after there was a lot of reviews and footage or commentary on the game. And all I remember was one of the reviewers was like Z Garcia reviewing the game. And in that review, he just keeps talking about the bumps on the board because they did this embossing to imply the grid.
Yeah, they used spot UV to make it pop up. It was great.
Yeah, and he just kept going on about the bumps like it was a negative. And I thought it was going to be like this super... I was like, how gaudy is this? And then so that was like the only thing on my mind.
Oh no, so you had no idea. You're like, what kind of ugly duckling am I getting? And then you're like, wait, this is so cool.
Yeah, and then I approached David at the booth at PAX U when it was making it to the US. And I said, hey, David. And then I just kind of like touched the board for the first time. I'm like, what is Z even talking about? So I don't know. There were other things on my mind. But yeah, the reception's been pretty nice.
Oh man, yeah, that's always kind of a hard thing on the publisher side, because sometimes they get games sent early from the manufacturer in order to like have kind of a soft release to hit a show, but the retail release doesn't come later. And so the game designer normally gets their games when the retailers get their games, because that's when like the whole shipment is shown up. Where it's like this in between of like, as a designer, I'm like, I want my game now. I want to promote my game now. But also I'm like, there's only so many. It probably should go to reviewers. And it's like this weird, like mixed feeling thing. So that must be surreal when you're hearing all these mostly good reviews, occasionally weird, bumpy board comments. That's the piece of the process that not everybody always like has to experience or like knows anything about it. Like I know for my next game releasing, I'm only getting like a copy at the show, and the rest of my copies will show up when the rest of the copies are like available to retail. And I was like, all right, I get my one copy. I'm so happy. I'll wait for the other five.
Exactly. Just getting that first copy. And there was just a little miscommunication. And then so I didn't get mine till later. But once I saw it and I could see how everyone was responding and the dual layer cover and the flocked in interior and the indentions or the embossing on the boards, I was like, it's really, really nice.
You're like, my kid's not an ugly duckling.
Exactly.
Amazing. And you said kind of the initial start to this game was pretty much in like 2020. So like how long in total was it from that inspiration to publication?
I guess 2020, and then pause for 2 years, prototyping for 3 months, and then getting it signed roughly right after that, and then 9 months from there. So I guess that'd be like 3 years.
Honestly, that's like a normal timeline, but with a giant pause between. I think the game, personally, I've actually played it, so I thought it turned out really cool. It was one of those ones that I wanted to play for quite some time, but it was hard to find. But my friend Derek had it and taught it to us, so that was pretty good. And for you, like, what did you find really special about this design outside of the components, but for, like, you as a designer? Maybe something that you learned from doing it.
The thing I thought was either special was the development process of the market itself. About the time that I started designing the game, I was really inspired by games like Hats or Bites and Veggie Dice. And so just like the way players decide what is scored was very fascinating to me. And so finding a way to make that make sense, be integrated in the gameplay, and I don't know, just for that to be like a big like design hurdle, because even though I was inspired by some of those games, that really wasn't something I'd seen that much. And I've played a lot of games where like red things next to blue things are X number of points, and I was at a point where I really wanted to see what else was out there as far as ways to score. That was like a design success. And also I really liked designing the tiebreaker, if you're familiar with that. That was something that was strange part of the design process. So if you ever bid the same number as somebody throughout the game, a tie is broken by the previous number. That made me pleased by two things. One of which was whenever I had the first idea and it was like, let's get this thing prototyped, how it was going to be tie broken was not in that initial answer. But I was like, let's just pull this tie breaking system from another game and put it in there. And then what was hilarious was from the first time I ever tested it, people said, this tie-breaking system doesn't work. Don't do it. And I was like, that's weird. Like, I pull it from another game, you know? I haven't played the other game, but I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm doing it right. Like, why is that? And it was placeholder for a while. And probably by the fifth time of people telling me, please change this, it doesn't work, I took the time and effort to sit down and solve it, which is just broken by the previous thing played, which was nice because it wasn't any other components. This other design mechanism required other components, so it was just so simple. And then I was like, but what happens if there's a tie before that? And then before that? And then what if it happens all the way down to the very first auction? What do you do? And then that led to one of my, I'm not sure if it's, it seems ridiculous to call it my favorite part of the game, but something I'm very pleased with, which is that to start the game, you are dealt different bid paddles, and the lowest person is the lowest number is the person that goes first, and these are all your tiebreakers for the first round. So it those tiles do double duty as far as first player plus the tiebreaker, and there are some times that some people will just I'm gonna bid one or I'm gonna bid two. And it's like, well, I could bid one, but I know you. If you bid one, your tie breaks number is higher than me, and I have to do something else. So it led to interesting decisions as far as that first couple rounds.
I think that's really interesting. I definitely find tiebreakers to be a hard thing to do, especially like I work on a lot of social games, like party games, where it's like you want it to be as streamlined as possible versus a more strategic game where people want it to feel fair to them. So trying on different ones can be hard.
Yeah, and that's it's been really interesting as well, because someone might bid, you know, 17, and then in the previous auction, you're like, I don't care, 4. And then the next one, you really care, but because you cared a little bit the first time or in the previous round, and you tie on, like, you know, 20 or whatever, then because you played 4 the previous round, well, you now you're second place. So it's interesting how it can build on itself.
And do you have, like, a favorite and a least favorite part of the experience of this journey?
Yeah, I guess the favorite moment has been reading online or having people tell me in person that I have designed their favorite game.
Aw, that's so cute.
Yeah, that wasn't on the bingo card when I went out to design board games. So yeah, it's super appreciated. I love it when people tell me that, and it's just been wild every time. But if you ever tell me I'm like a deer in headlights, That's what happens.
You don't know how to take the compliment? Yeah. I love it.
And then I guess the least favorite was like everything moving pretty fast once signing it. So like every blessing is a curse kind of thing. So like it moved really fast and they said, hey, our goal is to have this out for Essen and come out this year. But everything from moving forward with it to coming out, just the logistics of it were quite fast. And I would have liked to have been at the Essen when it came out, but that just wasn't possible. So I was just at home soaking it up through YouTube from like the 15 design people that have like vlogs going around and scoping things out and social medias. But I went to Essen the next year, so. Not the same, but it was still nice.
Yeah. No, I had a similar thing happen when Caution Signs came out. It was supposed to be at Origins, but then my boss's last second decided to ship some early over to UK Games Expo. And I was like, damn it, I'm not going to be there. But Scott got to be there and sent me some pictures, but it didn't feel the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, I've had games in like mass market, but you don't get to like, I mean, you go into Target, that's pretty great. You get to see it, but it's not like quite the same as like seeing your game be like the booth theme or something. So what was your biggest takeaway from this whole experience as a designer? Also, I do apologize. I used to ask what was a piece of advice, but now since there's been over 100 episodes, I've gotten the same answer too many times. So I've switched it up and you get to be my guinea pig for the first time.
Oh my God, I had such an answer. Okay. Yeah, I think when starting to pitch this around, I found that when I talked about this game to the few publishers that I emailed this to, there was a different type of response to this game than some of my other games. And it seemed like the setting and the mechanics could all be easily wrapped up into a sentence or two that sound compelling. But some of my other games, my other prototypes, they worked, they were games, they were fun. But how do you summarize that short and succinctly? One of the other publishers that I emailed to was like, yeah, we're not really taking submissions at the moment, but you know, we're kind of backed up, but what are you pitching? And I forget exactly how I summarized it, but it was something like, it's an art auction collection game where the players decide the value of the art. And then that publisher had a response back with, oh, tell me more, also send me a prototype. And I was realized there was something about that sentence and something about the way it was structured that was a little bit different. And I've kind of carried that on forward with every game and prototype ever since.
No, that's a great takeaway. That elevator pitch, you only have so much time to get someone's attention.
Yeah, and it was like a couple weeks before PAX U, and I was like, let's not write a dissertation here. Let's just tell them a little bit. And if they're interested, they're interested. And then it seemed like it was telling a different story or a compelling story. And that was different. I've actually told that to a couple other people as far as like, I need to make sure I keep doing this. Instead of just like making games that functionally work and are fun, but there's a different third element about kind of getting across that publishing finish line.
Yeah. I know that when I pitch, I tend to pitch each game as if it's already out and I'm pitching it to someone walking by a booth wanting to play it potentially. And I've found that doing it that direction actually helps a lot because it kind of like you start with that energy. You already have stuff you're going to point to. So it's like the same as if I was demoing at a booth. And it seems to work because I continue to sign things. So like, I'm going to keep it. I'm going to keep going with it.
Yeah, it's a good strategy.
But no, that's so cool. And do you have any other projects like in the works that people should look out for or any cool prototypes you're pitching?
So the main and most important thing I want people to know about what's coming up is that there is a Kickstarter for the deluxe edition of Art Society that will be starting September 2nd and it will run for about 3 weeks. People should go check out that Kickstarter for all the deluxified components and Kickstarter extras that the publisher is going to be promoting, as well as an expansion to Art Society.
Heck yeah. Well, then for my last question, completely unrelated to everything we've been talking about, if you could have been the designer of a game that was already made, which one do you wish it had been?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't normally think this way, but I know you ask it. So I would say The Number, which is an auction game, and I like auction games. And each genre has a set of questions that need to be answered. And for auction games, it's often like, why don't I just bid with my highest number? What's the impact of losing or being the lowest? And why does it matter if I play a 6 versus a 7? This game answers all those questions. I mean, I think every auction game needs to answer all those questions, but this game answers them in very different ways. In the number, players are auctioning numbers by bidding on numbers, if I am accurate with that. And so every round, players write a 3-digit number on their board, and players score their leftmost digit as long as no player below them wrote any digit in their number. So if you wrote, 987 and I wrote 338, because there was an 8 in my number, you wouldn't score. And I would eliminate your whole bid, and I would score my 3. The game has like 2 rounds made up of like 8 auctions each. And if you are the person with the highest number in that auction, you get a little bonus. And then the bonuses increase throughout the game and or throughout the round. And then in the last round, they're times 2. And the first time I played, I had the highest number of that round, and it was an 8, so I got 16 points. And there's another set of scoring, which is every time you use a number, you cross it off. So on your board, you have like 0 through 9. And so every time you write a number to bid with, you're crossing it off. So you can't use it again. So you're limiting your decisions, but also at the end, you also get to score however many you used. And I think you can only use them if you score them. So if your score was eliminated, therefore you also can't score those points either. And there's like 2 types of auction games, in my opinion. There's on the board auction games, which is what Art Society is. It's like right there, you're getting stuff to build a thing. You're looking down. And an auction game like the number is you're kind of thinking about, what are they going to do? What do I need to play so that I can like stop other people from getting numbers? And that time that I mentioned in that last round where I played an 8, it was really awesome because you can see what other people had already crossed off. And my friend that was playing with me is like, oh, you're going to play an 8. We don't even have 8s. We can't play 8s to stop you. And it was just this really great moment of how that all came together. And the game is 2 rounds, so I think it's a good one.
I'll definitely have to check that out. Actually, my first ever sign game had an auction mechanism, but I had it be like the back of the customer deck would either show if it was a rich customer or a poor customer. So like you want the lowest number if it's a poor customer. If it's a rich one, you want the highest number. And so that like made different parts necessary or like worth something. And so those mid ones are kind of like the trash it cards. Yeah. So granted, I heard the theme changing on that. It was Innkeepers and now it's a bee game. So I don't know if it's going to be called Beekeepers. I'm not really sure. I signed it years ago and I don't know when it's coming out.
Okay. I'll look forward to it.
Honestly, same. Yeah. So, everyone who's been listening to this episode, thank you so much for joining us for Game Design Unboxed Inspiration to Publication episode 123, Art Society. And Mitch, thanks for being on the show. For anyone trying to find you on like social media or blogs or website, where can they find you?
Yeah, on social media, you can find me at all the places under Mitch W. Games. And I have a website that's not entirely up to date, but MitchW.games as well is a place to find me.
Awesome. And I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. For me personally, you can find me under the handle Token Gamer, GAYMER. And for anyone who's a fan of the podcast, as a reminder, we branched off into a social media aspect. It's Game Design Unboxed on Instagram, TikTok, and our website. So definitely check those out for some short form videos, giving cool tips and also unboxing some of your favorite games. Thanks for being on the show again.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out NoDirectionPodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at Let's All Play.com. Join us next time.